If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Headstuff Plus.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This show is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
My name is Keane, and She Done Already Had Hers Is, and you're listening to Sissy That Pod, your favourite RuPaul's reaction podcast. And it is the finale of season 16. 16 weeks have come and gone, and we have a new queen in the Hall of Fame. Well, Troy is in Coachella. Joining me back on the podcast, the OG is back, James is here. The two of us get into the finale and episode 15 of season 16 and just kiki about the season in general and where Drag Race stands as of 2024. So it's a fun catch up. I just want to say thank you to everyone who's been listening this season and interacting on Instagram. Those of you who signed up to Headstuff Plus is really, really appreciated for all the coverage of UK versus the world that is still there. If you are finished the season and are going on to that next, you can catch up on all the coverage over there. And yeah, I'll catch up with you at the end of the episode. But for now, welcome back to the podcast, James O'Hagan. Okay, season 16 has come and gone, and here to help me wrap it all up is a friend of this parish. James, how are you keeping?
Blast from the past. Delighted to be back.
Yeah, I'm curious to know, because I was about to ask this off mic and I was like, no, save it. Now that you're not doing the podcast, how's your Drag Race consumption changed? Do you let them build up and binge them, or are you still watching week to week?
Joe, I'm actually watching them week to week, and I'm quite enjoying them, because they've sort of like, it's from doing the podcast, particularly on Saturday mornings, I think that it's fallen into this kind of nice sort of Saturday morning, get up, make yourself a bagel and a poached egg, sit down, have a cup of coffee, watch it. Like, it's sort of, it's moved out of, and I think that this is probably part of what's happening to the franchise overall. It's sort of, it's moving out of the, like, you know, manic viewing party in the evening, kind of really exciting part of your social life that you're like texting your friends about, into that more passive consumption phase. I don't like it, but yeah, so like I watched this week to week, and I watched the UK versus the world week to week. And, you know, I'm like not bothering overly much with the, like, sort of, you know, outside of the Ru-universe. But yeah, it's kind of nice. It fits in. It's a nice thing to sit down and watch of a Tuesday evening, or like of a Saturday morning, as I said, with my bagel and my poached egg.
I mean, is there anything on that bagel? Bit of butter.
There's a bit of you're going to be going full on, you know, a bit of Philadelphia, nice. Maybe a bit of avocado if you're, you know, in the mood, and then, you know, some Ballymooly relish, you know, to complete it. Sometimes some smoked salmon if, you know, yeah, if you're really treating yourself.
If you've got a good week in work.
Exactly. If you've brought in them coins.
Honey, I'm home and it's a smoked salmon Saturday. So last week I didn't do an episode of the pod because, kind of following our tradition, skip it. And, you know, if IMDb is anything to go by, which probably isn't, it seems to be the best episode of the season. How did you find episode 15?
I enjoyed, I liked the shakeup of the format. I thought that it was, and obviously, and they kind of, looking back now from seeing the finale, well, I suppose they were kind of like introducing us to this new space that would become the finale thing, and kind of soft launching the like non-massive kind of live from the Orpheum Theatre Hollywood kind of space. You sort of knew what to expect with it. I really enjoyed the format of it. I found it very exciting. I thought that it was better to have the like lip sync for your life part in the as kind of a sidekick, because I always felt like that when you have that lip sync Lollapalooza in the actual show, it really just disadvantages queens who aren't very good lip syncers. So the likes of Dawn or Q were able to kind of just shrug it off and be like, I'm having my 15 minutes here, I'm enjoying it, I can just, you know, we'll leave this battle to the people who are like proper great lip syncers. And then also it gave us that like mildly silky-ish redemption moment for Megami, which I really enjoyed, because her lip syncs were the strongest throughout it for me, definitely.
Yeah, like, I think, you know, in the past few years, they have bent over backwards to try shove a lip sync Lollapalooza into the narrative of the season that have just fit perfectly. And I think it just ends up with just like shenanigans and tomfoolery to try and make us believe that Jasmine Kennedy or Jax would go home when they're amazing lip syncers. So
yeah,
I think they were felt unencumbered at this stage to kind of just let the queens at it and you know, see who wins. I did wonder, like, do you remember Naomi Smalls chatted about how, like, they got to choose from the box, I mean, in quotation marks, but all the box had the same answers. I was on guard for that sort of, you know, rigor mortis. And I was wondering about the balls, whether the balls all had the same name on them. But I don't really know to what benefit it would have been.
Yeah, I think, because I think that when they're like, production in this case wouldn't really care, like, who won, because it is like a secondary placement and, you know, you're getting your lip syncs whatever way. Like, maybe if they wanted to make sure that you didn't end up with, like, I don't know. I feel like they probably were just like, nah, let's just let that one play out whatever way it plays out. And I'd say that they were genuinely probably fairly surprised by how well Megami did, because I would anticipate that they were expecting this to be like the redemption moment for Maya kind of a thing, that she would just storm right through it. And yeah, but having lip synced about 700 times on the show, I think we were all a bit bored of watching Queen of Flips go.
But that's all she had was the flips. I do think, yeah, okay, we'll get to the Megami and Maya actual lip syncing results maybe a bit later. But yeah, I quite liked the idea of having them all back. When I came in, I realized like I had missed Plasma. She was the one I kind of think I was like, I feel like I've the most grief for your exit. I think I would have liked to seen you a bit more in the last few episodes.
Yeah. No, I get, like, I was watching it again, kind of, because I sort of just think that Drag Race is kind of, like, accepted now that it's sort of in its plateau era, that it is kind of background noise. It's not, like, the main, it's the secondary plot line in the gay community now. It's not kind of at the same, like, so mammoth level of kind of exposure and importance it was. And I think it sort of has just embraced that. So instead of, like, trying to worry about creating this sort of legacy thing, it's just giving us Drag Race the TV show, and that means I don't know, you're kind of, the characters are more encapsulated within the whole season and it's less bothered about kind of who's going on outside of it, if that makes sense. It makes sense in my head, I'm not sure if it makes sense to you, but yes,
yeah, it's
you're
like
right.
They pushed all the boundaries as far as they can push them,
yes,
and now they're just
exactly
happy to chill in the boundaries.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're right. There's some queens that you watch as you go through and you're like, I literally am not going to remember who you are 10 minutes from here. And that's fine. You're doing this right now in front of me and it's perfectly servable. Plasma is one of those people who I genuinely think would be excited to see back for another iteration of the show down the line. The same for Saphira Cristal and Plain Jane. So I do think this has been a strong cast in that way. But yeah, there's some of them that I'm just like,
Geneva Carr.
Literally. The Serena Chacha of the season, Geneva Carr.
I mean, when she had her moment and she was like, you know, I think I'm going to win this. I'm pretty good at lip syncing. I was like, okay, rolling my eyes, not a chance.
No.
Are you gonna win this? So yeah, they lip sync on this new stage, which I don't know if you watched season 2 of Secret Celebrity Drag Race, but that's the stage they built for that, or
okay,
they used for that. So I didn't know they were going to use it for the finale either, but they must have built it after the finale of season 15. Anyway, that's the stage they used for Secret Celebrity Drag Race, for those who haven't seen it. I don't know if we need to get into each of these individually, but I'll just run through the first four lip syncs and you can let me know if there's anything you want to discuss. So Dawn chose Amanda and Amanda chose Damage by Danity Kane. Q chose Megami, who chose What About by Janet Jackson. Morphine chose Geneva, who chose Million Dollar Baby by Ava Max. And then Mirage chose Hershey and they danced to Alone 2.0 by Kim Petras and Nicki Minaj. Any standouts of these four?
I mean, Dawn, or not the very first one that you mentioned.
Yeah,
there,
Dawn and Amanda, yeah.
Dawn and Amanda. I loved the sort of like, I'm not going to win this energy that Dawn brought to us, kind of as, and Q had exactly the same thing, and I just really enjoyed that. Because I think sometimes on Drag Race, you know, acknowledging that you're not good at something and therefore you're not going to win is such like a nail in the coffin, that like it was kind of good to see these queens in a moment where they could acknowledge the fact, I'm here to do my best, I know I'm not going to win. A mandatory meeting, I want someone to do a PhD PhD into the mandatory meeting, playing Jane, kind of like on again, off again, frenemies, I think just enemies at this point on the internet. So I understand like how it all happened and why it all happened and the rest of it. But yeah, Megami's one was probably the one that I was most sort of surprised by, because I fully had anticipated them being booted out first time. And then they gave a really interesting and fun performance and like fully deserved the win as well, which I was surprised by. Actually, Mirage as well, I would say. I really like Mirage, and you'd be excited to see them. You'd want to go see them. They seem like a really good performer.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Q was just standing there punching the ghost, I feel like, for the majority of that song. And it's such like a... I don't know, there's such wild swings of emotions that like Megami was able to capture, where Q was just standing there punching the ghosts and kind of gesticulating, and that was kind of it.
But she was just there. I'm showing off this look that I've undoubtedly made for myself, so that other queens that may be applying for season 17, 18, 19 of the show know that they can get in touch with me about making their wardrobe. Because, you know, she knew she wasn't going to win, and she was like, that's fine. That's fine by me.
I think the queens already know better. Somebody shared on Instagram, one of the fan pages shared like a list of looks that she had made for other people, including Jada Essence Hall and Trinity the Duck. So she like has made some amazing looks for other queens already, which is kind of interesting.
God, it's smoke salmon Saturday, every Saturday.
Absolutely,
for Q.
Over in Q's house. I do think, obviously, Amanda can do stunts and tricks, but there's something about her delivery which is kind of messy.
Yeah, I think that like as a dancer, having performed like and worked the world and stuff, like she's an incredible dancer, but I don't know if she's quite flipped that into like drag performance, like the emotion side of it. So yeah, you definitely noticed that when she was back this time, you kind of say, okay, this is actually where it doesn't quite add up. Like you can be an amazing dancer, but if you can't bring some of that performance into it, you're not going to be able to like stick around.
Yeah, I think so too. If we jump quickly to Mirage and Hershey, they had this whole fake out about whether Mirage was going to know the Nicki Minaj verse. And I don't know that song overly well, because I don't like flagrant covers of other songs really like that one. When they built that all up, I was expecting the Nicki Minaj verse to be a lot longer than it was. Like, oh, it's like four bars. How could she have not known that?
I have to say, Hershey is someone who I feel like we maybe didn't get given all we deserved from. Like, I feel like they were very funny. They obviously could perform. It was sort of sad that they came on and like that first outfit they made was dreadful. They rightfully deserved to be in the bottom and then to go home as well. But I just feel like underneath the surface there's probably someone who could have been like an excellent queen throughout the thing. Because they kind of had like that kind of incredible calm Bob the Drag Queen energy that I was like, this is someone who feels really in control, just knows and sort of like has a humor about everything. So I was like, when they came in, I was like, oh, she's going to go far. And I was like, oh no, she's going to go first.
And like, I've seen people lament online as well about like, you know, lamenting the era of Drag Race where it was just casual fashion, you know, and it's like people walking.
Oh my God, absolutely.
Hershey would have slayed.
Hershey would have
Rebecca Glasscock.
Oh my God, Rebecca. Or what was it? The woman who wore the woman? What was the woman? The woman who wore the same outfit? It's just beginning with an M. Who knows? Season 4 or season 3? Look it up.
India Farah.
Cowboy hat and the
Mystique.
Mystique Summer Madison in her like dressy top and white jeans. Oh my God.
Honestly.
Long lost serves. Long lost serves.
I have to say, I think the best actual lip sync performance of the whole episode 15 comes from Morphine up against Geneva, because there's wig reveal, there's an actual costume reveal, and that bit where she like pulls her hair up and then does the splits, like she killed that. Like I feel she won the whole episode on that lip sync alone, and I kind of thought it was a shame that they weren't allowed to change in between performances, because it would have just given us a nice kind of palate cleanse.
No, I completely agree. I had anticipated that they would be able to come back changed again for the new show. I mean, it would have like added so like a new dimension to it as well when you're bringing it back. So it would have been nice to have that, because then it was sort of like there was no room then for real like reveals or kind of like, you know, gaggery or tomfoolery or whatever word you want going into the second round. But no, Morphine was a fantastic lip syncer, and also one of those queens that really stood out from this season as having so much personality.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And I don't know if it's this one, but later on, she windmills and just checks her nails at the same time.
So I love that, because I think that whoever she was against at that point had like done the windmilly bit as well, and she just was like, well, I'm going to show you that I can do this like 3.5 times longer while like filing my nails. It was perfect.
There's a three-way lip sync which never really works. The Maya, Plasma, Tsunami. Tsunami had given up. She said she couldn't move. So it was just Plasma doing sort of karaoke style, real interpretation of the lyrics, and then Maya. Maya was kind of just in the background just doing flips. Like,
this is what I felt like as if Plasma deserved to win that one. I thought it was like Maya like literally went to the very, very, very back of the stage and then spent like about like 15 minutes trying to get into a handstand. Like it was like it just wasn't sort of it wasn't giving performance. It was just like stunts and shenanigans. And whereas I felt what Plasma did was great. And like as for Tsunami Muse, like may as well not even have been on the stage. Like honestly, just went over, like got out their folding chair and sat down to watch the other two perform, honestly.
Yeah, it was sort of wild. I feel like Maya went through because the producers were like, "Ah, but she'll give us a good show now later on in the episode." But
I feel like maybe there was a bit of like producer jiggery pokery going on there, where they were like, "No, we want Maya through to the next one so we can get like a head off between her and someone who she's previously sent home."
Yeah, I think so. That was the first batch. Amanda chose Megami and they danced the Shoop Shoop song. I actually think this was Megami's best performance because when she kissed her, made out with her hand, and then even when she was it that one where she anticipated the splits with her fingers?
The splits.
I thought that was such a powerful way of like undermining the splits from somebody else.
I facially as well, like her performance was so comedic and she had like the kind of Cherisms involved in it, and she was able to, I thought like even though she knew obviously she couldn't do the tricks or the stunts or like the backflips that Amanda, which honestly, Amanda, the Shoop Shoop song is no place for a death drop. Like, it is not the moment for that.
You're not listening to all I say, Amanda.
Exactly. So I just felt like from having the comedy involved in this and having the kind of face was really the most important thing for that. But yeah, I think it was the one that Megami like really clearly just won.
Yeah, I think so too. Then there was Morphine and Mirage. I think that's the one where she did the windmill and checked her nails. I liked... the gamer talk here that Mirage was the mid boss. She had 70% health left. She was going into the final battle with 30% health left. I like that one. And then, so then Megami is then up against. So then it's Morphine, Megami, and Maya. Megami gets chosen. She chooses to go up against Maya, and they dance to "We Got the Beat by the Go Go's." I felt this probably had a heavy edit to it, and I couldn't tell, did Maya give in or did they edit out her stunts or what was going on? Because I was kind of surprised Megami won this.
I felt it was very messy. The people were like, you weren't resting on a particular queen for any length of time to get a sense of what was going on. Whereas like, say with the Shoop Shoop song, you'd seen, you kind of saw what Megami's performance was where, I mean,
she did the hand puppet.
That I enjoyed that bit. I was just remembering that with the goggly eyes on, or googly eyes on,
which was a throwback to when you did the lip sync to Taylor Swift's song "The Emerald Warriors" with a puppet,
with a beautiful puppet, a poor puppet that now resides in a skip outside my house.
That's where Brandon Urie is culturally at the moment.
it matches up perfectly. But no, I like that. I did enjoy it. I thought it was good fun. But like, I don't really remember that lip sync all that much. It didn't stay with me like some of the others did.
So finally then it's Morphine versus Megami, and I think everybody danced by the CNC Music Factory. Great song, great at a house party, summer barbecue time, get that on the playlist. Odd lip sync choice where there's very little words,
but I think as well it's one where you have to lean in to the comedy of it because there is like dance breaks and so few, and some of the lyrics that are there are just kind of camp and ridiculous. So like trying to do a flirtatious and sexy everybody dance now, I'm not sure whether I find it believable.
So that's the lip syncing. Because it was called Reunited Lip Sync Lollapalooza, I thought we were going to get some aspect of reunion, some aspect of the confrontation between Amanda and Plain. I know the reunions, I guess, since season since COVID, I guess, have been kind of underwhelming. And I feel the producers want to kind of just amend that. But this is actually the first time that we've had a big major villain in the season. And I'd like to see how that plays out.
To be honest, I kind of think this is the first time in a while where it hasn't been a love fest the entire season, and it would have been nice to have kind of some proper dialogue. And I was kind of expecting, like, when I saw that the finale had gone up yesterday, I thought, oh, maybe there'll be like a reunion after it and they'll all be on the stage. But no, there was none of it. And I do think it is a shame, because you'd like to get under the bonnet of that, like even if it is just sort of, you know, plain Jane kind of, you know, apologising and saying, oh, well, look, I came across really bitchy, they didn't mean it. Because I think ultimately from watching Plain's trajectory throughout the season, she is just someone who speaks her mind, like who doesn't think before she speaks, but doesn't seem to genuinely have like bad intentions behind herself. So I was kind of like, you know what, it would have been good to have that sort of dynamic or that moment between particularly yourself and Amanda.
Yeah, exactly. And that'd be the main one that I'd want to kind of address. Yeah. And Dawn being the secret villain, cursing everybody in the back, would have been kind of a bit of fun as well. But I wonder, was it delayed by the fact, I'm pretty sure that lip sync Lollapalooza was filmed like after episode 14, like there wasn't any break between them.
I do think maybe it will be. Although I was wondering though, like, did that mean they filmed the finale? They obviously didn't do the gap in filming for the finale. Like, they filmed the finale for the season at the same time. Like, are they the same people in the audience for the finale that were in the audience for...
I mean, good question. I had just assumed the finale was filmed recently, but I have not seen the red carpet photos and stuff. Like, I've seen red carpet photos from that Vegas review show that's back under a different name. Our favorite show. Cameron Michaels going on the date on the Vegas Eye, honestly.
Is Nebraska Thunderfuck in it this time around? That's what I want to know.
I mean, Derek is, so maybe, I don't know. maybe you're right. Maybe it was filmed after season 16. Now they have the studio.
Yeah, because I do think that like it, that to me kind of speaks to this, like a kind of a realignment, like a re-understanding of like where they think their seating is, because they aren't laying out what would be the enormous expense of like renting out a Hollywood venue and having like a full day of production within that space, you know, in order to just do it on the set. And I think fair play to them, you know, I think it's the right move, but yeah, the bigness of like those, like the season 9 finale where you had like the literally thousands of people there, like it's hard to recreate that with like sort of, you know, a polite clapping audience.
I'm just thinking now about the songs. I mean, they must have had some period of time pass, because Leyland had to go write those 3 songs for them and they had to practice and choreograph them, and I imagine they had some opportunity to go and then prepare their finale look like it.
They would have had to have been fairly, like, they would have had to have a certain amount of soothsaying to know that Padam Padam would be sort of like as colossal a hit for Kylie Minogue in America, because it would have been last July when they were filming it, or like early, or like June they would have been filming it, so that would have been...
Yeah, let's go. Like, maybe it happened in October or something. Like, maybe they did pre-film it in advance, but there was maybe 4, 5, 6, maybe a month or something.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Baby Tribe podcast, your essential companion through the journey of parenting. I'm Professor Afif Al-Kafash, a neonatologist, paediatrician, researcher and lactation consultant at the Rotunda Hospital Dublin and the Royal College of Surgeons in Ireland.
And I'm Katie Mugan, a paediatric and public health nurse and a lactation consultant. Together with over 40 years of experience in caring for infants and children, we're here to share expert insights, inspiring stories, and give you access to an amazing array of experts in parenting and the field of paediatrics. And we're covering topics that span all the childhood years, from infancy straight through to the adolescence. We're going to cover it all.
It's not going to be just about the challenges. It's going to be about the joys, the milestones, and stories that will hopefully warm your heart. And I'm sure, Katie, you're still going to give me as much abuse as you did before.
It's going to be a great season, Afif, and we're so pleased to have all you guys join with us.
Available every Tuesday wherever you get your podcasts, in association with the Head Stuff Podcast Network.
Hey y'all, it's Jasmine Kennedy. Make sure to listen to Sissy That Pod.
It's kind of like Eurovision, the finale, sometimes where you just, there's parts of it that you just, You just watch. You just
skip through.
You're just like, all right, okay, here we are. You're off. You know,
they really were doing their best in order to like try and fill the full hour on this. Like, poor Elvira, fucking sat in that stage. Like, yeah, cool, thanks. This is lovely.
Rue with the green screen limousine behind him.
Pink limousine, RuPaul.
I mean, I find him fascinating and his music career fascinating. Like, I can't think of any contemporary artist who is in their 60s, who's releasing maybe an album a year, his music must be more than just a soundtrack to the show he makes.
Has RuPaul released more albums than Taylor Swift in the last 4 years?
Okay.
So this...
not including the re-releases, definitely not.
Mama Ru is his midnights.
Yeah. And what's the new one? Hustle That Cat or something? That's the Tortured Poets department.
Oh, good Lord. Good Lord.
One, two, three. So since 2020, there's been four. You're a Winner Baby, which is his folklore. Mama Ru, which is Evermore. Black Butter is Midnight. And then Essential Christmas that came out that's more of a compilation, is it?
Yeah. So that's the revisiting the back catalog. But no, but it is for someone who like obviously like, yeah, I was thinking exactly this when I was like, for someone who like really the music feels like it should by the amount of effort put into making it feels like just like a cash cow tie-in, and so that they can continue sort of, you know, I don't know, having a presence on Spotify. I don't know. But then like inserts a performance or two into like every available opportunity, every available orifice has a RuPaul performance slapping out of it.
But like, he doesn't just make like only one song from the whole, like I'm looking at Black Butter here, the Wikipedia page, and like ASMR Lover is on it, which was used on the show, and I can't recognize any of the other songs that have been used on the show. So the other songs were Star Baby, Show Me That You're Festive, Cake and Candy is used. That's actually true. Okay. But they, like, he must make them out of passion, because otherwise just release them as singles.
My God. I mean, if that's what you're making out of passion, RuPaul, stop.
I like the Metro Weekly rated the album 2 out of 5 stars and said that it struggles to argue for its own existence, but then included it in its list of 5 must-hear gay anthems in 2023.
that's controversy right there. They're holding straight music to a different standard than gay music.
Yes, the year of Padam Padam.
The year of Padam Padam. Oh my God. The year that JoJo invented gay pop, and here we are. Oh, Christ.
So anyway, we even get a performance, and I guess I was just watching him dance. Watching him walk around the stage. And
I want to see a drag queen get up on stage for a lip sync for your life and do that, because that is the same way, like with the sort of, you know, the vague sort of bouncing side to side, and see whether they're like, oh my God, you killed, you slayed the game. There's but not again, even any like the pretense.
The performance, that must be because he wants to do it, is it? Like, I don't understand.
No one is making him do that. Like, no one is making him do that. So, like, that is 100% a choice being made in the production room by Rue to be like, do you know the SNL sketch? Don't make me sing. Don't make me sing. That RuPaul is the don't make me sing Kirsten Wiig.
100%. That's perfect. Because I was even comparing him, because I saw Madonna this year or whatever, end of last year, who's 65, so a bit older than Rue. Now, I guess, has a lot bigger dance background and history and stuff, but can move a lot better than Rue can, you know. So,
but I feel like I genuinely feel like Rue could if Rue wanted to, but Rue doesn't really like gives it the energy that he wants, you know. But and also like he's always like surrounded by like 70 incredibly hunky dancers, you know, doing all sorts of like splits and
but it's an easy day out for them, because like they can do minimal and they still look, but you know.
Yeah. Next to the towering RuPaul.
Yeah. of the final looks of the various queens, did you have any favorites of the walk?
God, now can't even remember what most of them looked like. I would say that I loved Nymphia's idea. I loved Nymphia's execution. I thought it was really, really great. It was just sort of, it was campy. It was exciting. It kind of brought me exactly to where she was. I really didn't like Saphira's. I thought Saphira's look was, and maybe it was a very specific reference to something that I wasn't getting, but I just thought it was so ugly.
This is the blue with ugly. Kind of a silver corset, and then there was a big like bouffant black gold sort of headpiece and chest
piece. And the chest kind of out. I didn't love that. Can I think of what the other queens were wearing? I loved Q's.
I loved Q's. That's that was my favorite.
It was phenomenal.
Velvet, big shoulders. Oh yeah, cape came like a really, really long plush velvet train.
I also really appreciated the kind of like campness in Maya Amanda Pages, that she had like the braces in the hair. And like she had like the like extra kind of big braces on in the mid. So it just was kind of like fun playing into that kind of visual thing from her.
I liked that one too. That stood out to me. Not just like in terms of like if you saw that on a mannequin, you'd be like, yeah, okay. But the way it shone.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Was striking. Just those diamonds, like it was mesmerizing, I found.
Yeah. And I also really enjoyed Dawn, because I just think that like her looks have been so kind of creative and different that it just was. Like, it just was sort of, like, exactly, it just reminded you of that type of drag in the space, because it was great. And yeah, I mean, you know, they all looked, they were all lovely girls, but those were my standouts.
Yeah, it was real sort of like Whoville, Whovian look, but kind of gone dark, or, you know, like, the sweetness has gone out of them with the kind of magenta feathers coming out of either head, and these kind of like snow cape and all kind of white and light blue kind of frosty gown. Worst for the night for me was our gal Geneva Carr, who had the checker plate cape, and then just like there was this kind of, I guess, kind of lilac kind of quilted corset, but it just sort of hovered in front of her chest. Like, it didn't look like she was wearing any of it. It just looked like she was wearing a necklace.
No, it felt like, it did have the feeling of something that was made there for a challenge. Because even that fabric is super difficult to, because like, it doesn't lie properly flat, and it always looks like it's kind of like trying to escape from whatever form you've put it in. So it looked sort of, it looked like sort of like a foam costume, or it wasn't. And am I right in remembering that there was a neck piece that was unattractive?
Black sort of web vinyl-y thing.
So
the queens before the final three perform Queen of the Wind, which was a kind of Lady Gaga meets Eurovision style performance from Nymphia Wind. Plain Jane gave us Bodysuit, this sort of rap pop electro song. Both songs really sounded like they belonged in 2011. And then Saphira Christelle came out with this sort of Lizzo style disco song about joy and slew foot, which I still don't know whether we all have consent to laugh at that, considering it comes from her hip dysplasia. Like, I don't know whether we've ever, like, if she's actually okay with that being her catchphrase.
I sort of, if I was Saphira, who is, I would say, one of the most accomplished queens that's ever been through Drag Race, based on just how they performed, that, like, she's being reduced down to this one element. Like, oh, you, like, it's like, yeah, despite and beyond my hip dysplasia, my slew foot, I've managed to become this amazing queen. But like, we don't need to be like, oh, look, it just because like it is just sort of, you know, a bit like the Daily Mail pointing at a sad child and being like, oh, look at that sad child. But I felt like there was absolutely a lead, like the Nymphias and Saphira's were head and shoulders above Plains. And I felt, just even from watching the three of them, I was like, yeah, like those two feel like more effort and energy even put into them. Because like Plain Jane's one just was very generic. Whereas at least Nymphia's and Saphira's felt like a bit more like they were related to the queens and their journeys on the show.
Okay, I hear that, because I don't like, Plain Jane did wear a lot of bodysuits, and unless that's like a reoccurring criticism that she got online, she never got it really on the show necessarily.
Yeah.
But in terms of the song, it was sort of like self-referential and camp in a way that I thought that was the most likely to be played in a gay bar none of these are ever being played in a game.
Yeah.
But like, if there was to be one, it was the, oh my God, I've got another bodysuit on this bodysuit kind of gag that we would kind of enjoy the most. But not
Metro will probably list it as their top three songs that you should listen to.
Metro
the
Weekly.
Well, this actually will be their top three. Yeah. No, but I also felt like watching the conversations after, like, plain Jane was incapable of giving sincerity and authenticity in the interview, and I think that just completely blew their chances away. Like, they couldn't bring, and it was like even their mother was kind of giving that moment of sincerity and warmth and human connection, but Plain wasn't able to kind of bring that too. So I just think instantly I was like, right, well, Plain is out of the running for this.
Yeah, I must say, I didn't get spoiled for me, but I did open up a browser to Google something during the episode, and I saw, oh, winner, we have a new winner of season 16, and the article's thumbnail had a picture of Plain Jane, and I was like, oh crap, did she win? So I was watching it with that could have been a potential spoiler and worried that she was about to win. I wasn't totally impartial seeing that, but yeah, I did notice. I was like, girl, she really can't give us anything. Like, she was able to in the private, with the queens, but not in front of Rue. She wasn't able to open up.
Yeah, and I think that, when inevitably she arrives back on some form of, versus the world or All-Stars, that will probably be part of the narrative of, I've learned to be more vulnerable. I've learned to be more authentic. Because, she just seems to have this wall up where she needs to be seen in this very particular way. And, especially when next to, Safira, who just radiates warmth and sort of, this sort of motherly vibes. And then Nymphia, who really came in, who really has come into this sort of, I watching Nymphia break down so completely when her mother was so supportive was just you could not just absolutely love them. So yeah, I felt like
I was also obsessed with Safira's mom as well. I thought Safira's mom was so, I was like, I want to just go for a few pints with Safira's mom. Like, she looks so
absolutely
cool.
She can wear that rank dress out of the closet.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think also the fandom online, it's interesting to know how much Rue would have paid attention to that. And I mean, that, if depending on when this was filmed, based on our theories, if this was filmed before the season ever aired, mm-hmm. then I guess fan opinion was not taken into account with Plain Jane's emotion.
Yeah.
So I guess it's hard to know. So maybe it is purely down on having not given enough emotion.
Yeah, because I don't get the impression that if they did film this kind of before it started airing, I think that the top two were a guaranteed pick. They wouldn't have, been filming all sorts of different combinations. So yeah, Plain, I think has really become the personality of the season. And rightfully so. I think that they are they brought back that kind of old school drag villainry that we haven't had on the show for since probably Roxy Andrews would be a good comparison of just someone who kind of is a bit of a trickster but also lovable.
They also want her back for an All-Stars.
They do. I honestly just can't get over the fact that Safira didn't win. I have been unable to process that.
Okay, well, we'll get to the final lipstick. I just want to skip through all the different bits, time filling up exercises. After Plain Jane gets eliminated, we have a videotape on mums. Aren't they great? We love our mums. Sasha Colby performed Her by Megan Thee Stallion. It was nice that she actually got to perform something.
Yeah, and a real song.
Song. But I think there was some, I don't know, there was a ulterior motive there, because after Her, they played You Know You Better Work, which sounded exactly like the Megan Thee Stallion song. It's oh God.
Oh my God. Who was it that sued RuPaul for stealing their music?
I can't remember.
Oh my God. There was someone that was Azealia Banks came for RuPaul for stealing. And so now Ru is going to go Azealia on Megan Thee Stallion. Yeah. Oh my God. It's a never ending chain.
The Queens return in red, white and blue and perform the song that we had about voting during the season. That was a fucking flop. Then we get the the Miss Congeniality of season 15, who I had totally forgotten
existed. I was like, I was also just like, do we need to have that? Could we not have had Mistress come back instead?
I mean, I like Malaysia, and then once I heard it, I was like, oh yeah, of course. And it was the right fit at the time. And I thought about her once this season because she was from Palace Bar, where Morphine and Maya are from. So she comes out in this gorgeous brown feather dress and announced that there's a tie for Miss Congeniality, Tsunami Muse, and Sphere Cristal. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I did wonder when that happened, like, could you, like, was that kind of indicative of the fact that, like, Saphira wasn't going to win? Because I feel like you should be precluded from, like, I know these are all made up rules, but it feels like you should be precluded from Miss Congeniality if you're already in the running for, like, the main title. So I did kind of feel, but also, like, Saphira was undeniably the kind of mother of the season. So not giving it to her would have been sort of, like, it would have. Yeah, I don't know. I like rules, and I like a rule where a queen who's in the like finale group isn't eligible for Miss Congeniality, but that it's for the queens who haven't gotten to the final. So probably I didn't like it.
Yeah,
on balance.
But I don't know if they've ever stated that. Like Nina Flowers got it in season one, but sure, that was making up all the rules. But I always felt like it was an unsaid rule that if you're in the finale, You know, you're not on the running because you could win. You know, you got to the finale. This is kind of like scraps that you're fighting for down the end. And like there's so many other queens who could have won who were motherly or could have won Miss Congeniality as well had they been in the running. So yeah, I don't know. But maybe it's because it was so undeniably clear how nurturing she was to everybody that they had to give her something. And then they were like, let's also give some scraps to the cast. And they went for Tsunami Muse, who I like, who I thought was very charming, who didn't make a huge splash, but was always nice to see. I can't remember any occurrence of her being sort of, you know, helpful or a shoulder to cry on or any of the typical activities that might get you.
No. I feel like she just felt like sort of an affable character in the background. And you know what? Maybe that is the most congenial thing you can be. Just an affable character in the background.
So are they both going to come out next season and give it a prize? I mean, I guess they are.
Yeah, I guess so. Mm. Yeah, or like they'll pick whichever one is the cheaper.
So Tsunami. All right, so see Tsunami. Yeah. right, so this is the final lip sync. So all season, Ivan, Team Saphira, just I think she had that, you know, we kind of speak about it in terms of the Vivian or Bianca Del Rio, someone who's walked in and you knew they were the one to beat. I felt like that was her energy all season and she didn't drop it. But I have to say, I think Nymphia pulled it out of the bag this is possibly a saving of the format, I feel, because we've spoken about how Sasha Velour broke this format on the first outing. This is the closest thing to that outing since.
This is it. Like I was saying, I was devastated that Saphira didn't win because I think over the course of the entire season, Saphira has undeniably been like a cut above the rest of the competitors. But it is like not even a question that Saphira lost that lip sync to Nymphia. Like what Nymphia did was like, it was kind of redefining the thing. Like it was unexpected. And then not only was like her reveal and her gag kind of quite unexpected, then like she just like performed the hell out of the actual song when she got down to her like sparkly yellow panties. Like, so it was just, and like you could sort of see that Saphira's gag didn't pay off with this whole like vampire thing. Like it didn't work with
the look was bad as well. I didn't like the final look.
Yeah. Do you know what makes me feel like as if this recording happened kind of prior to the Padam explosion is that neither of them had anything red on them. But anyway, they'd obviously used their red looks for that terrible red troop marching.
I mean, I guess they're both synonymous with a particular color, sapphire and banana. So true, I guess they had to kind of stay true to that in their final look. But yeah, I think also Nymphia just had the momentum of not having lip synced in the show. Obviously, she did like the girl group and stuff like that. But like, I was watching, I was like, oh my God, I forgot that she was basically trained to be in a K-pop band. Like, all the stars aligned right at the right moment and she hit it out of the park. And at that point, my allegiance had fully flipped. And I was like, I really hope she gets it after that.
Yeah, no, I like when, like, at the end of lip sync, I kind of was like, well, the writing's on the wall here. And like, even though it may not feel like the right fit for the season overall, I think in this moment, any other decision will be the wrong decision. And I do think that, like, Safira now is like absolutely open to come back to like an All Stars or to any other sort of version of the franchise, and you know, it would sort of walk in there a bit like Jimbo, like pre-crowned.
Yeah, or Shea Coulee kind of thing.
Yeah.
Definitely up there. So that's it. Another season has come and gone. I did miss the celebrity spotting that we normally get in the Orpheus Theatre. This did feel a lot more friends and fam vibe.
Yeah, there was no... It was like that cookout they had on the All-Stars 5.
Yeah, with the paddock.
Yeah, exactly. Little paddocks on either side of it.
Was Kendall Jenner there? Was one of the Jenners there? I thought I saw... Maybe she was just a beat influencer. I don't know. I'm not sure.
I didn't notice any Kardashian Jenners in the like crowd of like 15 people spanned across the place. But I do think, obviously, like for me, it's kind of Drag Race, like sort of deal. It's like Drag Race has been like overspending its budget for the last while, and now it's finally like following some influencers on TikTok who are giving it advice for how to pinch pennies, and they're cutting back on some of the expenditure. And I do think that I probably did miss some of the buzz that you get in that, especially because the finale episodes are so boring and could be 10 minutes, you know?
Yeah. Oh, could have been an email.
literally could have been. Like, I mean, honestly, Jada Essence all winning on Zoom is the most correct thing that's ever happened.
But like, you know, part of what's so good, part of what makes the finale better is the reactions from past queens. So think of like Mo Hart's face when the butterfly thing failed,
or
Aja's reaction to Sasha Velour, like, you know, like they kind of
Stacey Lane Matthews with her little camera phone out filling.
Yes. Or Trixie Mattel asking Acid Betty, did you or did you not come for me? Like, there's these fun moments. Give us more of that. I know, give us more queen to queen interactions, maybe, is what I would say.
Yeah, and I do think like they could easily have like invited some of the past queens along to have them there for that, because I mean the World of Wonder lot is full of queens who are, you know, kind of just looking for a gig, and it would be nice to have something of that red carpet style of feel. So I think that this is probably the first time they're doing it in this format, and I'd say that they'll find a way to grow us to feel a bit more kind of finale-ish. Like, and I know I took the piss out of Elvira getting that like lifetime achievement Yeah, it was interesting to learn more about her, and it kind of felt nice to be like spotlighting someone. And I think, you know, once, if you were to do that over the, you know, next couple of years, that'll be sort of a nice kind of legacy to create now of these people who are being spotlighted.
Also, how would you feel if they had announced the All Stars 9 cast at the finale show?
I guess still, like, this is always like, I think it would be really, really sort of, you know, unfair on the queens who were on season six, or on the season, that like they were having their like moment just like completely evaporated while everyone went to look at the more famous ones. Like, it's kind of like the way they cancelled the season 5 tour of UK in order to have this sort of UK versus the World 2 tour, whatever it is. Like, you need to let the cast have their flowers before you announce it. But I also would have thought it would have added something more exciting to...
I mean, like, so they just air the show, and then they just put out the press release later on. They go, oh, it's coming on the 17th of May or whatever, it's coming out. Like, they release on the same day, but I don't know. If they had it somehow tied in or gave us clues or something, I don't know.
I reckon they just wanted any coverage that was being written about the winner to, like, also include a line of, like, All Stars is coming on the 17th. So they were kind of just trying to get that additional kind of line in there. But... you know, it would have been, I would have gladly taken, you know, Got Mick's runway return instead of the We Love Our Mums, We Do moment montage.
We Love Our Mums, We Do. Yeah, I don't know. Or have Jimbo there. Like, I know Jimbo was the host of the live crowning when Nymphia found out she actually won. And yeah. I don't know if you saw the plane was dressed as a sort of like crone hag thing, and I wonder, was that a commentary on her being the villain, so she dressed like the villain kind of thing?
Yeah,
I don't know. I think like obviously it can still be improved. I was just wondering whether that would, I don't know, create more of a thread between the seasons, but maybe they want to keep them siloed.
Yeah, I do think it would have added more glamour and fun to that, to the finale, but I can understand as well that they probably didn't want to immediately kind of like, you know, kick this cast off and then suddenly just like have all the All Stars 9 queens being like booked up. Although I cannot believe we're at All Stars 9, how long we waited for All Stars 2, and then here we are 8 years later.
I meant to say, did you like Sasha Colby's, what do they call it? when she came back to give the crown to somebody else.
Oh.
Instead of returning, look, there's a word like deferring or I don't know. There's a
coronation gown, something.
There's a pageantry word to it that I'm not getting right. But yeah, what do you think of that look?
I have to say, sort of similar to the Saphira Cristal first look, it's kind of, I get the cool idea of like, look at my huge earrings covering my knockers, but I also was just not loving it. I liked some elements of it, but I didn't like other elements. I think that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not Violet Chachki. I did quite like it. I thought that was novel, and I think it's a nice balance between serving body and serving glamour, which she can do both of.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, though, as she came out, the bustle was showing, was the only thing I could see then at the bottom. But, like, I thought she looked great.
I just think it was very constricting to walk in, and therefore it felt very uncomfortable watching her move around in it. Like, you could tell that, like, the connection between the head and the breastplate cover was obviously, like, very, you know, she's having to stand. And, like, you know, you don't really associate.
Was it a breastplate or was it just her breasts?
It was just her breasts, but, like, with the big yoke stuck over them. But you could kind of tell that, like, she was uncomfortable wearing it. And, like, you know, that when you see that in someone like her, you're kind of like, that's not what you're meant to be. You're meant to be, like effortlessly glamorous and flowing and beautiful. Exactly. Godeffs.
Yeah.
The spelling goes.
As the spelling goes. All right. Well, look, that's season 16. Any final thoughts you want to share on the season?
I think that season 16 has, like, done... I think season 16 actually has done a really good job in kind of repositioning Drag Race. I genuinely do. I think it's kind of like, put it maybe after a couple of years of where I think it was scrambling around to try and figure out where it belonged, now that it was no longer kind of, you know, the golden goose, I think that season 16 got the balance right. Because I think, you know, like, if you think back to, say, season 14, it just went on too much. There was too much love. I think season 15 probably had more iconic moments.
But it was cut still... by the 40-minute episodes.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, this felt like, okay, you know, it's like, it was like, you know, one was too hot, one was too cold. This was just right.
That's it for another season. They've already sort of hinted that All-Stars 9 is coming soon, so I shall talk to you in a few weeks. Until then, enjoy the start of summer, look after yourself, and I shall see you, love you, bye!
This show is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network, a hub for the creative and the curious. Shows are produced in association with Head Stuff and the Podcast Studios Dublin. Find out more or become a member at headstuffpodcasts.com.
If you want to support this podcast and get a full ad-free episode, sign up to Head Stuff Plus.